This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 175, Killing the iPhone. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday with my co-host and friend, Michael Martin.
Woohoo! Woo-hoo. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing well. I'm tired, man. I flew back from Dallas last night, and boy, my arms are tired.
Yeah, well, next time you should try not doing handstands the entire way.
That's right. No, so we were talking before the show about airlines and airline experience and everything. And on the way out this week, I had a 90-minute delay with said airline. And on the way back, I was kindly wedged in a middle seat in the back of the plane between a guy bigger than me and another guy bigger than him.
Aren't you lucky?
Boy, so, howdy. With a little kid kicking the seat the whole time.
Now, if you're really lucky, you would have been able to enjoy a holographic phone and yes. just kind of let all that melt away. Just be off to the side. Away. You never even would know you were there.
I could have imagined that I was on a mountain peak on a cool winter day with the hair blowing through my hair like a Peppermint Patty commercial.
Yeah, so this Mashable article was pretty cool in my mind, and I had not heard of the Red. Actually, I have to pronounce that with all caps. Red phone called the Hydrogen, which is intended to create a holographic image that you can see without using any kind of glasses. And I love the Star Wars example of the little holographic communicator that you see in Clone Wars and all those other things. You hold it in your hand, and up above your hand appears a holographic image of something, like a person you could talk to, or in this case, the images of what ship is that again? I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, God, yes.
It's
that ship that Princess Amidala, yep. I think, was on.
Padme was zooming around in. It's the real slick, sleek one that got blown up.
Alderaan. It was an Alderaan fighter, I think.
A cruiser.
Something. Didn't it sound impressive? It sounded like I knew what I was talking there for a second.
It did. I you almost had me fooled. So I thought it was pretty darn cool that this is a method of showing, hey, this is what holograms are going to be like for the future. And, you know, we've said it once, we've said it 1,000 times, it's that science fiction is what helps us to imagine what the future can be. And this is exactly that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been following Red from a camera perspective for probably 10 years since I heard about them on one of the podcasts I used to listen to for video editing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really nice high-end video cameras. And, you know, I always mentally imagine that you can take camera technology and invert it and make it projection technology. So I guess this is kind of it, though. You know,
it's a reverse camera.
It's a reverse camera. It's taking it's like Mike TV from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, right? You wanted to be in the TV. It's like you go through the camera and pop out on the other side in 3D. So, very, very cool. And as I agree with you completely, excellent example to get people to kind of grok the whole concept with the little display that I guess that's Obi-Wan's mentor was showing. And I can't remember his name.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So there you are.
Yes.
So moving very quickly to the Boy Genius Report article about how, quote, this is how Apple might kill the iPhone. Oh, shoot, there's a air quotes in there. Might kill the iPhone. Yes. The folks over at Boy Genius Report are highlighting, as one is wont to do in this space, some patents that have gone through. And in this case, we've got some really nice Munich patent stuff, because there's the Frauenkirche and Marienplatz and all this stuff, of some glasses. And the whole concept here is that the phone has been a very important part of Apple's business model for quite some time now. And there is a post-phone future at some point out there where even this red device might not be what it is that you need or use or whatever. And here we have is an AR glass type solution that's leveraging, I would say, almost an iPhone-esque kind of environment to provide more detail on elements that you see around you. And gosh, where have we seen something like this before?
Well, I love the design or the mock-up design of the phone that they start with, right? And the little Siri button instead of the regular button in the bottom center. And It's funny because I have been following this exact discussion for probably about 6 to 8 months now on various other podcasts as they're looking at, you know, what's the next big thing that Apple can do that kind of moves the state of the art from science experience to mass adoption. And everybody knows it's USB-C, right?
Well, of course.
And the lack
as
of...
As somebody who's just bought another pair of dongles, you bet.
You can never have enough dongles. but seriously, the basic idea that we want to keep holding our phones in front of our faces to do AR is a bit naive. And even though... You know, the consumer aspect of Google Glass kind of disappeared. The adoption of augmented reality in work and business settings has been just constantly growing for the last 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And we see that with Google's announcement earlier this month with an updated Google Glass for Enterprise device, as well as my Glass got updated I want to say 3 or 4 weeks ago also with an updated operating system on it.
Really?
Yes. And so changing the UI to be something that you can do, and we've talked about this ourselves, without using your hands and without having to look away from the work that you are doing is critical. So speech to text, cognitive technologies and augmented reality brought together will change the way that we interact with computers, right?
Right. And where the computer anticipates your action without it becoming the Microsoft Clippy.
I see you're trying to drive your car.
Would you like help with that? I see you're about to fall in a manhole. Oops. Too late.
Would you like... Never mind.
Right.
Exactly.
But, you know,
exactly.
This is a space of it just works that could easily is not the right word, but it could happen.
Yeah.
And when you have cameras that watch you and track your eye movements, and this has been the case now in military and other applications for quite a while, it's not impossible to imagine how that environment and that kind of interface could work without you being Mr. Mumbles or having to do something really, really wacky in order to interact with your environment.
Yeah. And it's not just military implementations, right? There are, I remember 3 or 4 years ago seeing videos online from startups that were adding a camera and a accelerometer and a few other devices to, fleet vehicles so that you could do driver behavior analytics and also you could understand, you know, is my truck driver getting sleepy? Is their head bobbing off, right? Are their eyes, you know, what are the types of things that could be a safety issue in a work environment or in a fleet environment? You see the same thing with other vehicles being updated or even some of the new Microsoft tablets with what do they call it? Microsoft Hello, where the screen is looking at you to allow certain events to occur. So people are getting more and more, I don't want to say comfortable, I would say used to having devices that understand what's going on in context with the user using the device, right?
Right.
Which then allows for more and more insights in order to, back to your example, have Clippy tell you you're about to fall in the manhole, not oops.
Well, and part of me feels like we're accelerating the process to concepts that we've chatted about already for years, which is the mind-machine interfaces. Glasses are certainly interesting and will probably be the next logical step, but the contact lenses or implantables are certainly, you know, not out of the realm of possibility. And finding the ways of interacting directly with the brain in a non-invasive way, boy, wouldn't that be the killer offering right there?
Well, you know, at MoogFest, I went to the one thing where they were doing brain interface work. The one doctor who did the paraplegics kicking a soccer ball at the Brazil soccer match, right? Soccer match. The World Cup. It's, you know, it's just a soccer match. No. And they showed examples where they were doing stuff. Unfortunately, it was invasive, but with implantables with certain primates. And the fact that not only could you extend the senses, even though your brain doesn't necessarily understand how to deal with the additional inputs that came in through the sensor.
Right.
Your brain has enough plasticity that it uses it in the decisions, and then extending it, and this is where it gets kind of in that sci-fi creepy mode, to the hive mind, where your brain and my brain are both connected via that same sensor, and we start behaving differently based off of knowledge the other one has, right? So, yeah, I don't think we're going that way in a non-invasive mode, but, I mean, just the first two stories here, the ability to project information in the real world visually in three dimensions, and the ability to overlay that information in a work environment or in a personalized environment is going to change a lot of things. And the hardest part there is going to be what's going to be our interaction with it besides just voice. And you found another Boy Genius report on some work that a group is doing at Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah, so this one to me was really exciting because I'd like to be in the spot where you can do augmented reality without having to wear glasses. So the solution here is not a mind-machine interface. It's a projection system that can hang down from an overhead light bulb to project augmented reality apps onto flat surfaces. So instead of having to put on, you know, your Google Glass or your big hologram or HoloLens type environments, this particular idea from the guys at Carnegie Mellon projects down onto the surface of the table, and with its camera can see how your hand is moving, so you can signal what you want to have happen, pick out from a palette of apps, size and resize, snap the thing that's being projected on the table to different objects, and then move them around. I thought this was really quite clever, and it reminded me very much, Michael, of and I think you had this, of a keyboard that would project down onto the table so that you could type on a keyboard, a virtual keyboard that might be stemming from, say, a phone that doesn't have a keyboard.
Yes, I still have it. I don't use it much, but it's one of those really interesting ideas that implementation is probably not as good as the idea. And then you and I both supported, was it a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo for the projection watch?
Yes.
Right?
And that's still in the process of coming.
Oh, any day now. I can't remember. Hey, was that a Kickstarter it's or stuff. An Indiegogo?
It's hard stuff, you know?
But this one is actually pretty simple, if you think about it. I think most of their real hard work is in software, because it looks like all they've done is taken a Pico projector, which is, you know, a very small, about the size of a deck of cards, HDMI video projector that does usually 1080p, and attached it to, like, a Microsoft Kinect sensor, in order to give the three-dimensional information necessary to understand where the hand is and the projection is within three-dimensional space.
Yeah, and I like I said, the video of this one is well worth taking a peek at. You can find this all in the show notes. But if you imagine just going onto your desktop, because it can watch where your fingers are, and I wonder how it does that. It looks like it's picking up your fingernails, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you signal, one gesture is, hey, show me my palette of icons. Then you can select an icon, and then you can drag it where you want on the screen, on the desk, make it bigger, make it smaller. So it has some real neat characteristics to it. It doesn't bring the full power that you can get from a Microsoft HoloLens type solution where you can look at the wall and see where the plumbing is and you know where to drill, or that you're repairing something and the thing you need to do next in your step is highlighted and the instructions on what to do are there. So limitations, of course, are here, but it's a neat step in the right direction that does not require glasses.
Exactly.
So I thought it was pretty
cool. I really like that. And like you, I liked some of the interface elements that they were doing and how they were interacting and doing snap to edge and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of which, there's an app that I purchased not that long ago. I think you have it too. It's called Magnet.
Oh, yes.
And I love this app because I can take windows on my macOS environment and then drag them to the top of the screen or the side of the screen or whatever, and it snaps to that edge and makes it a little bit bigger. And it's just super easy to say, oh, I want the web page on the left and I want pages on the right, and then I can edit pages from the web and I can work with both of them. They're just perfectly done as opposed to having, you know, clutter all over the screen or resizing stuff everywhere. So reminded me a little bit of Magnet as well.
Yep.
And all right. So we've kind of hit a number of augmented reality stories, and there's so many that are coming these days. I'm so excited about the speed at which this is moving along. It's all rate and pace, and it's substantiating long-held concepts from us. At the same time, I'm also really excited about what's happening in the automotive space. And there was one article that I came across from a company called Amber. And Amber
is this an Amber Alert?
It's not. Well, it could be. You should know more about this, but it's a different kind. So this was a student-driven team at the University of Eindhoven in the Netherlands, the University of Technology there. And they are looking to hit the streets with their self-driving cars, they say by mid-2018. And the announcement of this was done already earlier this year at the Hannover Messe in April. So the thing that I like about the thinking here is that their claim to fame is looking to be the Spotify or Netflix of mobility, delivering cars where they are needed in an anticipatory way, so that if you need a car based on their analytic models and based on machine learning, they're going to figure out where you need to be or where cars need to be, and they will be there for you to be able to use them.
So they're not going to be the Uber of predicted Uber? I mean, it's really interesting. The whole idea of predictive maintenance, predictive responsiveness, blah, 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 right? The use of analytical data in order to better predict when certain events are going to occur, and therefore to position assets, things, whatever, in the right place at the right time is a problem that is being worked on across lots and lots of different industries. So just looking at it from a self-driving car perspective or a fleet management perspective, I think is a great individual use case in mm-hmm. order to prove out technology that is much broader in the reach of the value, right? And so just think, in any type of maintenance situation, the biggest cost tends to be the biggest cost that you can prevent is what's called a truck roll. And so having the right vehicle with the right equipment and the right tools and the right expertise on it at the place that a device or an asset needs to be serviced is great. Having one of those things wrong immediately jumps up the expense of the event by, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. And so as you get more and more of it wrong, the worse it is. And so the ability to improve these predictive models to have the right stuff at the right place at the right time with the right blah, 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 has tremendous business value. So it's really interesting to see the fact that they're only testing, and this is what I think they're doing. They're testing the value of their algorithms just for car placement. And that would have applicability for an Uber or a Lyft or any taxi service or a limousine service, as well as validate the models and the accuracy of the models for other things.
Well, right. And this is really mobility as a service, you know, writ large. I mean, our concept of limousine or taxi is based on, you know, our current understanding of how people would get around. And it would make sense that taxi drivers would know that the shows at the London's West End get out about this time. And so that's a good place to go congregate because you're going to have rides there and fares, right?
Yep.
So this takes that a couple of extra steps further, where there could be a whole range of things around, oh gosh, you know, about weather, about sporting events, around a whole, a whole bunch of things that could be done. And, you know, this part of the conversation reminded me of a piece that I heard on NPR earlier this week about Google's Waymo company having a whole bunch, I mean, lots and lots of people riding bikes around the Google campus so that the Google cars could use their machine learning to understand the slightly less predictive way that bikes maneuver and go around so that they can enhance their ability to understand bicyclist behavior and actually the benefits there are that bicyclists find that that a self-driving car will pay attention to a bicyclist and not engage in scary or road rage type performance around a bicyclist and endangering the bicyclist. They'll just kind of like hum along behind them because they're a self-driving car and they're not going to race around them and gun their engine and try to wipe them off the road.
Yeah.
So interesting stuff, right?
Well, I like the way you put it. They're testing things a lot with these unpredictable bikes in order to be able to predict.
Well, but that's the point, right? If you have a large enough sample of unpredictable things, you can predict it.
Unless it shows that it is truly random and therefore unpredictable.
Oh, and look here. This particular article is about some guy named Rowe.
Seriously?
Yeah. Anthony Rowe, an associate professor at Carnegie Mellon.
Nice.
Not my.
Yeah, that's my. I don't know.
So, swinging back to the Amber example, I was reading there that that this particular self-driving startup has been using the BMW i3 car as their platform. Mm-hmm. They're looking at building their own car too.
Yeah,
and that struck me as interesting because of the following article that we saw from Mashable talking about BMW, Mercedes, and Audi that have teamed up. They formed a bit of a consortium, I suppose, and purchased a company that used to be owned by Nokia. Mm-hmm. I remember when they owned them too, called Here. Well, that's all capital letters. Here. Got to pronounce
those
things right.
Since it's all German company, it's Here.
Yeah. No, that would be different here. And
come and see here.
They're using this collaboration to provide their connected vehicles with information, much like Waze does, which is something I've always loved about Waze, to use the crowdsourcing of all the people with Waze on their phone. Their phone is on. And because the Waze app is talking back and forth to the phone, it can know where traffic is slowing down, it can know where their bottlenecks are, and it can do rerouting in a dynamic way. So here we have an example of Here being used by these three German automakers to consume data from those cars in order to provide a competitive analysis of traffic flow and the like, and deliver better arrival outcomes. How's that for fancy speak?
So, actually, cars? You know, I've seen here at CES a couple of times, and I've seen what they do, and here provides an extremely detailed and accurate map of roads and road structures, right? So when you look at something like a Waze or an Apple Maps or a Google Maps, they're pretty good at getting the high level aspect. You know, here's a road.
Yeah.
And they're dependent upon GPS positioning. Okay. Here, and Google to some degree with their street maps is doing the same thing. And I think Apple, if you look at their maps, is it TomTom that they use? When you actually go in the maps, there's like an about page.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen that. And
so what you end up, what here did is here invested a lot of money in fleets of vehicles that constantly drive over the roads. Okay. And so the investment that they've done is reflected in the accuracy and the detail level of their maps. So they provide the map, and Audi, BMW, and Mercedes bought that so they wouldn't be dependent on a third party, quote unquote, owning their maps and then having mm-hmm. to share data with that company like a Google. Okay. And so from that perspective, you now have these three high-end German automakers using maps that they now effectively own through this consortium, and improving the technology in their vehicles based off of their software stack that can be customized to the uniqueness of the maps that they now own.
Right.
Okay. So the one thing I don't think that you'll see out of this, which is a shame, because the HERE maps, like I said, they spend significant time, effort, and money making those extremely accurate down to the lane level. So Google, TomTom, and others on a whole do not have the accuracy down to the lane level because they're depending on GPS. And so GPS is restricted to like 30 yards, I think, or 30 meters mm-hmm. accuracy. So if you're on an access road next to a highway,
oh yeah,
there are times where it shows you're on the highway.
Yeah.
And so they have to use other sensors and other information from other cars driving in the same area in order to triangulate and figure out, are you on the highway or are you on the access road?
So the cameras in the cars could actually be used to
improve,
give
that
further detail and inform,
and
once
you own the maps themselves and you own the vehicles and you have LiDAR and radar and cameras and everything else in these high-end vehicles, you now have your own vehicles improving your own maps over time. That's really when I glance through the story, that's what this story tells me, is they're making an investment to continue to make their maps even better because the people who buy their cars expect the level of accuracy
mm-hmm.
that someone who gets a free map on their iPhone or on their Android device may or may not expect that same level.
Yeah, so now that begins to make sense, you know, because what, you know, when I was reading the article, it was saying, well, you know, Waze depends on satellite data and user reports for traffic maps. I was like, no, they don't. But the phone doesn't have those sensors. And while
right.
certainly the accelerometer in the phone can determine when there's hard braking going on,
yep.
The car's internal computer probably knows that a little bit better.
Probably so.
Really cool.
And then you start looking at, you know, other use cases. Think about, and I remember years ago there was was it in New York or in London or something, or Boston, an iPhone app that was tracking potholes,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it could tell you're driving and there was a bump and you're supposed to be on the road, and that would imply based off of the jarriness, the jarring of the phone.
The jar-jarness,
go back to Star Wars. the fact that there was probably a pothole here on the road, and then 10 other cars go over there within a certain amount of time period, and the accuracy of that predicts, once again, that is definitely a pothole. And
right.
so they can then get maps for the city to understand where they need to do a truck roll and improve the potholes. It all kind of fits together.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, that brings us to the end of a really cool session with lots of great news and more even that we didn't get a chance to get to. But before we go, anything you're playing right now? Anything you want to share before we go?
Yeah, I'm playing a really stupid game right now. actually, I'm playing two games. I got back into playing the driving game on the iPad.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I think you've shown me that.
It's just awesome. And then, are you a fan of Futurama?
I like them. I haven't watched a lot of them, but I know they have a Family Guy, Simpsons knockoff game too.
Yes, that came out recently, and so I've been playing that because I like Futurama, and it's the same typical grind, stupid freemium game, and of course I've not spent any money on it, but I did have something else. Speaking of augmented reality, someone was kind enough to get me a VR 360 headset for my iPhone.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, it's been such a long time ago, and I've been having fun skydiving and swimming with sharks and looking at some of the National Geographic and New York Times 360 videos and VR demos. Very
all
cool.
From the comfort of your home.
All from the comfort of my Herman Miller Aeron chair on a flat surface, because then I can sit in the chair and rotate 360 and roll forward and backwards and still safely not run into a wall. Very cool. And thank you.
Awesome. Well, glad you're enjoying it.
And yourself, any new games?
Playing a couple of them. So one that I've been goofing around with a little bit here recently is Neko Atsume, which is a cat game where you attract cats to your yard with various things they like to play with, like cardboard boxes or cat little jungle gyms and stuff. And my daughter loves cats. So this is something that, you know, she plays and I play and we share little cat videos and stuff with one another. So that's kind of cute and fun.
Very cool.
And one that I downloaded just yesterday and have been messing around with, and it's been kind of fun so far, is called Hades Star, H-A-D-E-S, Hades Star. And that's been interesting, too, that it's a space exploration game. There's some mining involved. There's a little bit of space battles involved. So I've only just started it, and it's a massively online world where I understand I'll be interacting with other players and probably trading and doing stuff with them too. So I haven't quite got that far yet, but interesting nonetheless.
Cool. So can't wait to see that one. Might have to play it.
Yep.
And if you wait long enough, you'll be kicking my butt like usual.
I've just been playing it a little bit. All right. Well, look, really happy to have you all on board for the show today. Hope you've enjoyed it. If there's some things going on in augmented reality or in reality or in mixed reality or anything, like, we'll be happy to dive in and explore it further as well. Thanks so much, everyone, and we will see you.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.